5, side 2, continuing our interview of Mr. Leon Arcus.
The thing that fascinates me, by the way, about David Wilkins is that though his interest, I think basically by his training, has been in older art, I'm not saying old masters, but older art, he is still interested in the contemporary. And therefore, I feel David can see art. He's not looking at history, he's looking at painting. And this, to me, is very vital.
The Pittsburgh plan for art.
Oh, you're talking about a very sad thing here. I was involved in that very heavily. It was started way, way back. When we first started, we had a small board. There was Norman Rice, who was then head of the arts department over at CMU. He was dean of the arts program. There was Mrs. Oh, heavens. Her husband was the head of the School of Public Health here. I'm trying to remember. He was Surgeon General of the United States. A rather interesting guy. Mrs. Parran. I forget his name, though. P-A-R-R-A-N. I can't remember. Anyway, Mrs. Parran and a few. I don't know if you knew. I'll think of these names as we go along. I don't think we were more than half a dozen, with the idea of trying to figure out what to do. They wanted to do something about, we were given the old building up at the King Mansion out in Frick Park, not Frick Park, but the one near the zoo, Mellon Park. And what to do out there. And when there were a lot of divergent points, most of them wanted to have a lending library selling contemporary art. All of us felt strongly that it should be centered on the Pittsburgh living artist, that it should be centered as a means of giving them incentive, a place to sell things, a place to exhibit, and certainly an inducement to remain in Pittsburgh and to do better. That's fundamentally it. I had a different idea, which I was not trying to spill over too quickly because it was much broader. At that time, we were thinking about the idea of a Pittsburgh, what should we call it, sort of a force for getting money and so forth for all of the activities in Pittsburgh. Shortly after that happened, Jack Hines gave Donald Steinfurst, remember him? Donald sent him abroad with the idea of seeing what art councils were doing abroad and so forth. I don't know if I believe in an art council completely. I don't want to get involved into the reason why not, because I don't think there's enough money to be had. And sometimes I don't think you've got to give money, and as a result, the one who loses out is the big thing. The symphony would lose out in favor of a lot of organizations that are, very frankly, maybe shouldn't exist. I'm not going to get into that, but at any rate, we all started this, and then suddenly Mrs. Parran came up with the news that she had applied to the Rockefeller Foundation and had created and gotten this big grant. So the Pittsburgh Plan Fire, which none of us knew what it meant.
It's always been called.
Ruth Wilner was a very active member. Came into being. And I'll never forget Norman Rice and myself going up to see Mrs. Parran And Ms. Perrin had a very strange way of talking about things always coming out of the woodwork and this sort of thing. It's always the same phrases will rise all the time. But anyway, she's quite a gal. She came across with the money. And she was telling us what we should do to get the organization going. And I'll never forget both of us leaving her house and both turning to each other and saying the same thing simultaneously. What's this all about? Well, that's the way the Pittsburgh Plan for Art began. It got into a lending library. It got into everything. We tried to make it into a show place to have more and more exhibitions, this sort of thing. It's sad. We did very, very well. Anita Morgenstern, Rebecca Berman were our, what do you call them, paid directors, and ran the thing. We did very well financially as long as we were up at the King Mansion. Then came the idea of trying to get out of there. Reason, people always griped about going all the way up there. It's quite a distance.
You're Highland Park, you mean?
Yes. And we also felt it was out of the exhibition area, so you got a reduced number of people and so forth. And the opportunity came with the bowling alleys down here on Craig Street becoming available. And that's how that, we finally got involved into building that into the plan. Unfortunately, with it also came greater financing and all that, and other people became involved who looked at it more as a, from a commercial point of view than actually from an arts point of view. And finally, it was reduced to such a degree, and I also think another factor was the interest. Norman Rice, by the way, had retired, and I think CMU realized that here's some good real estate investments. I'm saying this without any compunction. I think CMU is without doubt one of the most, all of these universities, the most mercenary operations I've ever been involved in my life. And at any rate, somehow or other, the board, I was off the board by then. I decided I'd been with us since the very inception. And by this time, I wasn't interested. The group that were running it, Winokur, Bob Dodds, who since left the city, and others, who were all involved in, what is this going to do for me? I'm sorry. The question is, what is you going to do for it? And as a result, they just turned it right over to CMU, who couldn't accept it, so it went to Carnegie Institute, who I gather, it's very involved. Nobody seems to know who owns it. But I think it is Carnegie Institute, who quietly will turn it over to CMU in a year or two. It's, you know, it's standing there empty. It's the best gallery space in Pittsburgh. It's sensational space. It was done by Sylvester Damianis. And it's a wonderful space. The artists who in many cases gave artworks and all to be sold, the auction and everything else, were the ones who lost the gallery. They got nothing back. All of us who were really interested in the art got nothing. CMU is going to get another building used for science. It's funny, art's never made an atom bomb. Remember that.
Then don't you think that the Pittsburgh Plan for Art has made any contribution to
it
the
It made a contribution in a strange way. Yes. And the most amusing part of it, it made it when it was, its best contribution was when CMU had it over the first year or two. It got in this gal, Elaine King, who used to drive me up the wall.
What was her name?
Elaine King. She's still here, I think, teaching a course. But she's primarily one of the reasons why it's non-existent, because they didn't know how to get rid of her. And she rubbed everybody there the wrong way. And I can understand that. On the other hand, they've lost a superb space. And I'm very resentful of this. I'm right now involved in a project which downtown of the Cultural Trust. I've been very involved with Cultural Trust since its beginning. The Azen building, do you know it?
Yes. Sure. Triangle building.
They never knew what to do with it after the subway took over. And it was given to the Cultural Trust $1 a year, rented. And so it's going to be turned into an arts venture. And Syl Damianis and I have sat down and talked our hearts out about this thing. I'm frank in saying that the space is terrible. Mind you, here we would be using the second, third, fourth, fifth floor.
Yeah, we went up. There was some sort of a...
You've been up there?
Yeah.
Did you go up by elevator? That's the only elevator. You get three people in it. How do you get a painting into it?
You don't.
How do you get a work of a sculpture? Those rooms are claustrophobic. They're triangular, awful spaces. I don't know what to say about it. There's only one way of doing it. They're going to have to put turnbuckles on the windows so that you can open a window, you know, and slide the sculpture in through the outside. I don't know if you know the system. They use a great deal in Amsterdam, where all the buildings are only about 18, 20 feet wide, but they have these old hay things, you know, you winches outside, you just bring them up. But I wanted to put an elevator on the outside of the building, attach it to the building, and bring things up. City's against that. Or so they say, I don't know.
You have to have the right guy fighting for it.
I think the thing is going through so much distortion to try to make it useful that I think it's worthwhile.
The only good thing of that whole building is the money that the family got for it.
The what?
The money that the family got for it.
I don't know.
I know.
But the distortion of that, what it's going to do. I had one idea which they didn't want to do. I wanted to create down there, do you know the difference between a museum and a I'm trying to think of the term. A Kunstmuseum and as against a Kunsthalle. An art museum versus a art hall. All over Europe, you'll find these Kunsthalles. They're not museums. They have no collection. But they do exhibitions, you see. They're very active. There's one, for instance, in Basel that I think is fabulous. Switzerland. It's a wonderful place. In fact, it's got the best restaurant in Basel. but all that aside, they put on fabulous shows, and that's about it. They own nothing except the building. And that's what I was trying to make out of the Azen building. I thought it'd be nice to have small shows. I wanted to introduce architectural shows for the first time. I wanted to do a lot of things that would have pertinence to Pittsburgh and not. It could be stuff from the outside. I wanted everything to be geared towards making a wonderful place for people who come to Pittsburgh, downtown, in the midst of the hotel area, to be able to stop in and get a respite. I also wanted the top floor devoted to a sort of a small easygoing restaurant, not a not a formal restaurant, but a place where you get you could even go a little higher to a form of dinner. It'd be a wonderful place, by the way, to
thank you.
Thank you. Reflection.
Thank you.
It'd be a wonderful place for those going to a play or something.
That's right.
In the evening.
The symphony.
Right down there.
Or hall or someplace close
and
by.
Especially a bistro sort of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted. And nobody wanted the bistro, so the whole thing fell through. I don't know what it's going to be now. Not only that, but they've also, in those little rooms, they want to have dance. And you can't. I think it's going to be a horrifying experience. It's like you're dancing right on top of you. You create no illusion. I just don't see it. Well, we'll see. I'm working on it. I'm still trying my best. But there are certain things you wonder, is it really worth while
the
going on? Yeah, because
you need to, because the physical sight is so important. It's such a central
It's a wonderful
site.
Spot.
That's right. Something has to come out of
it. But do you realize there are other buildings all around there that you could probably snag in one way or another? You could. Or. And the times are not very good, you know. It's a good time.
I've noticed that. I guess this is our next and most important question, where you are right now. So that's one of your projects. What you're doing right now, that's one of
your
projects.
What am I doing? Well, I have three forms of activity. The first one is where people come to me and ask me to find them paintings. Could be a corporation, could be a person. And I try to find them, the thing they might be interested in. Which is, I've come to realize, nothing other than another means of being an investment counselor. And so, in a way, I've reduced that. The other thing is I do a lot of, I want to stay in the art world. I like, this is my world. I like being here. I like looking out these windows. I want to pay for it. I can afford to keep it without having any of this, but I prefer if it can take care of itself. It requires very little money, but nevertheless, I have to make about $10,000-$15,000 a year to pay for all the incidentals involved. And so far, I've made it. In fact, I've made a lot more in certain years. But, and so I do appraisals, I do a lot of things of that nature. And these are advisements where I counsel. And I always get embarrassed because I don't even know what to charge people. I'm not very good at it. I'm still back in the museum helping people. Then the second phase is helping people. I really try. I'm very interested in what's happening to the city. I love the city. I'll do anything to maintain City Arts Grove here. You don't do very much, but you can help a little bit. That adds to the score. Then I have another aspect of my field, is I have a ton of kids who come up here all the time. These kids range from undergraduate students to older artists. They're always asking what I feel. I'm very touched by the vote of confidence where they can put their creativity into my hands, but I'm very careful about it. And that to me means a lot. Mm-hmm. Finally, I'm doing a lot of writing.
About?
You'll know when I die. You started it all.
My fault.
Yeah, they started it all. I've written my history so far. I've got about 60 pages. I'm up to... I just came back from World War II. And I'm not dissatisfied with it. The trouble is, every once in a while I go through the whole thing and then I rewrite it. That's the problem.
You can't be a perfectionist and do that.
Well, I think we all, if we're not a perfectionist, we wouldn't have started in the beginning. It's very important to be a perfectionist. you hit on a very strong point, because I believe in that. The same way I'm an elitist, I believe in perfection too. So that's what I'm doing. If you ask me what I'm doing, I don't know. Whatever I'm doing at that moment.
Let me ask you. At the present time, what artists in Pittsburgh do you think are really significant in the art scene today?
What artists or artists?
Artists.
I can't speak of one. I can speak of...
Yes. I say artists, plural.
Plural. Well, it's a little group I've gotten close to me that I feel very strongly about. And the reason they're close to me is it took me a long time to gather them. Paul Glabicki, Glabicki, behind me. Mm-hmm. Three over there.
We've talked about him.
Mm-hmm. These little ones here are all by him. These are... sketches from, these were part of his filmmaking. Second artist is one of the dearest, one most wonderful gals I've ever met. Her name is Diane Samuels. She's a sculptress.
You mentioned her earlier, but didn't tell us much about her.
What did you say?
You mentioned her before, well, but didn't tell us anything.
Fabulous kid. She's not a kid. She's about 40. At one point, had she not married her husband, Henry Reese, I think Jane and I would have probably adopted her. Because we have no kids, but... She's one of the sweetest people I've known, but not only that, one of the most intelligent and a highly, I think, a superb artist. She's strange in the sense that she keeps achieving things, and then seeking forward, she dismisses everything, starts all over again. Right now she's in Indonesia. It's a good change. I don't know why she went to Indonesia, but they went. She and her husband. She's a very, very delightful person who lives right near the mattress factory, is on the board, and has had a number of shows there. Talking about the mattress factory, Michael Olenek is another one. He's a sculptor. Michael interests me tremendously. He's a man without any oeuvre, practically. You can't, if you ask to see it, he'll show you several dozen things, but they're all very small. Ooh. But if you wanted to have a show, he could make it no time flat. Everything is stored in his mind. I've never met anybody like this. He has a complete mental grasp of everything he wants. He has this sharpness. Finally, the fourth person in this group is this girl right here who I think a great deal of. This is Mary Jean Kenton, K-E-N-T-O-N. Mary Jean is an art critic too. She lives down, what's the name of that town? It's got a wonderful name. I'll think of it in a second now. She's got two addresses, but I want to see if I know.
Yeah, I think we'll somewhere right.
At any rate, she grindstone, Pennsylvania. She and her husband, a chap named Jim Rosenberg, who's a poet, have a wonderful farm down there, which they don't farm. And I think very highly of her, of her paintings, and I can show you others back there, the big ones. I have a whole slew of them. There, she at the present time has an exhibition. It'll be an ongoing show until the end of the year at the mattress factory. She's on there now. Paul Gobicki's had a show there, and he's also had a big show at the museum not so many months ago. By the way, Mary Jean Kenton was in the International, the last International. She's part of a group that was of two other artists that were gathered by John Cage, the musician painter.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was a painter.
Was that?
I didn't know he was a painter.
Yes, he is. Yes.
Musician, I know.
If you can outweigh the pauses. He's an interesting guy, by the way, and you'd like him immensely. He's a very sweet man, very kind, gentle man. A man who's about, he's in his 80s, I guess. Amusingly, he's not a great, to my mind, not a great painter. I saw a show of his down at Duncan Phillips Gallery in Washington, and while it was delightful, it was beautiful color, beautiful sense of art, it seemed to me to be a little anemic, a little missing a lot of ways. That's about it. He's been up here quite a bit.
Why?
Well, he's interested in what's happening over the mattress factory. He's very close to Mary Jean. And he's got a lot of friends suddenly in Pittsburgh.
And speaking,
those are the ones who I would say are the major artists of our day. There's one more. And I'm trying to think of his name. He's with the Concept Gallery. And I have a problem here. Michael, what's his name? I'll think of it in a minute. I consider him, at one point, he's probably the outstanding sculptor we had in town. He's very brilliant. Then he went into painting, and his paintings were good. And then his paintings became very bad. And I hear that he's pulled out and he's better now, which makes me feel a lot better. He's a man who I'd normally, well, I've had an idea. I was trying to get some funding. I would go around with taking advantage of my reputation. I could go to certain cities like Chicago, go to the Arts Club of Chicago, which is still one of the best showing places of all. Go to various galleries in New York and Philadelphia and Washington. And put on a show which we travel called, I don't know, Four from Pittsburgh, Five from Pittsburgh, whatever it is. And the idea would be, I think it's time that Pittsburgh be given a certain amount of emphasis. I like the idea of the number from Pittsburgh, because if this show were put together in New York City, it would far outshine any other contemporary show in the city. I've gone around so often art galleries, it's the most banal, idiotic thing I know of. I know the space I want, I know the gallery I think we should be in, but it doesn't have to be a gigantic show, it can be an easy one. I wanted the show to be financed to a certain extent by one of the organizations here. The Cultural Trust was interested, but never sort of... Their interest in art has really been secondary to, I'm speaking of painting, to music, to theater. They're much more of a performing art group. And the arts of the plastic arts have always gotten second run, as far as I can see. I think in their endeavor to build up the downtown area, you don't show paintings, you show...
movement.
No, you show shows that bring in shekels.
So who might finance it? Who might finance such a show?
I don't know anymore. I have sort of lost a little... It's like a lot of things. Once the heart goes out of a thing, you just forget about it and go on the next one.
You have difficulty here getting finance for the arts.
There used to be a day where I could get it very easily. I can't do it anymore. And the reason... People have moved on to other points of interest. Also, there are people I could go to who would smother it. And they'd smother any idea with their own need for credit. You can't do that. The artist comes first.
End of side 2, take 5, continued on tape 6.